Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show, home of the 2016 Baltimore Mayoral Debate, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We are starting our conversation off today looking at the trial and situation around Keith Davis Jr. We're joined first by Bernard Woods, who's a reporter with The Guardian and was formerly editor-at-large of the city paper and joins us here by phone. And Bernard, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, great to be back, Mark.
And y'all join us here, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages, 410-319-8888. But for just a quick second, a review, Bernard, take us back, which I meant to do at the top of the hour, to the very beginning and how this arrest happened and why you think it's caused so much controversy, especially among members of the activist community in Baltimore.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a fascinating case. It was the first police-involved shooting post Freddie Gray, or post the uprising following Freddie Gray. And so it was on June 7th, and police opened up, and I think they found 35 shell casings in the aftermath in a garage where they cornered Keith Davis. And at first, the reports were sort of, I remember the day that it happened, and everyone being kind of still on edge and nervous that, oh, man, the police shot someone else. And then it was almost this very comforting thing that everyone said, oh, he robbed someone, he shot at him, it's okay. But that it seemed like there was something that wasn't adding up there. And then Baltimore Block got together with Kelly, who's Keith's fiancée, I guess you're having on in a little while.
She'll be joining us right after you, right.
Yeah, and so she really has led the sort of march that what they said happened couldn't have happened. And a lot of that, so the trial was just they spent a lot of time trying to report on it for the months in between as the trial continued to be delayed. And what became clear to me was that whatever happened that day, what the police did didn't seem to make sense. And the various police accounts of the day didn't make sense. The shooting officers didn't give statements until last month, until January 15th. And so there were no statements, no use of force reports. One of the weird things may be that one of the officers involved, Sergeant Santiago, was the supervisor of the other ones. And so the other ones on the stand in the trial, when asked why they don't do that, well, we wouldn't do that. The supervisor would do it. So the kind of reports that the department should fill out weren't filled out, and statements weren't given until after the letters of declination were issued by the state's attorney's office, which was more than 6 months after the event had taken place. And so when the officers, the trial was really a fascinating trial, the very first witness. So what was supposed to have happened was the police report says that they were taking care of an auto accident when a hack pulled up, and in one account sort of hit them, and in another account hit their car, and another one didn't.
Right.
But said, hey, this guy's got a gun. The guy jumped out. The police chased the guy into a garage. And so when they got when the state's attorney got the hack driver up on the stand, and he eventually stood a couple feet from Davis, and she said, do you recognize the person who was in your car? I said, no, that doesn't look like him to me. So that was the very first day of the trial. So it started out really poorly for the state's attorney's office. And throughout the rest of that day, looked really bad for the police department, with one of the witnesses in the garage saying that as she ran out, a woman police officer shot right by her face, said that the police sort of compelled her earlier statements by saying he was light-skinned, right? And then as the police who were involved in the shooting went up and testified, their stories really didn't tie together. So the jury found Davis not guilty on 15 charges, all of which stemmed from either pulling the gun on the hack. They said that he repeatedly pointed the gun at them when he was in the garage from around the refrigerator, and that's how he was, why they ended up shooting him. And so the jury found him not guilty on all of those charges, but the state presented evidence that there was a partial palm print on the gun that was recovered in the garage, and so he was convicted on a separate charge, which wasn't brought. Another weird thing about the case is that charge wasn't brought until December, which was just a prohibited person, a felon, in possession of a firearm. And so, you know, that's where it was left off a week ago. But as Kelly was about to testify, she gave a press conference that day that a homicide detective had subpoenaed her to the grand jury. And so later last week, they ended up charging Davis with a homicide, an account of homicide, which as of Friday had been nulpros, you know, and on the case records. So it's sort of unclear what's happening with that at the moment.
So is he charged with murder or not?
He is. They charged him, and Davis, the other Davis, Commissioner Davis, held the press conference talking about it, and so either they just nulpros the district court charges to bring it to circuit court, or the FBI, according to the Sun's report, the FBI was, and Davis was saying the FBI was involved in the investigation, so there could be an attempt to make it be a federal case, which... I can see that with the Baltimore Block, the activist group protesting in front of Mosby's house, with the way that this is sort of the trial has made the police department look, I could see how they would be interested in you know, I don't know what they're doing at all, but how they could be interested in sort of stepping away from the, you know, what could end up being the publicity surrounding this. As I think Justin Fenton put it on Twitter, that this could be Baltimore's making a murderer. When the trial comes to case.
Huh. So what about the controversy before Kelly walked in? What about the controversy around the Keith Davis attorney talking about the palm print being bogus, palm print on the gun? What do you know anything about that?
I mean, so I know that was in the case, that was her strategy for trying to address the palm print, that the state's evidence to say that it was... say that it was a conclusive identification is, you know, wasn't as conclusive as they made it out to be. I know nothing about that kind of forensic science, and so I can't weigh on. But also, and the judge wouldn't allow, we didn't get a lot of testimony. I think that LaToya Francis Williams, his attorney, I think that she was trying to lead down the path that he also had been unconscious for a long time, and so that there was the possibility that the gun, you know, the gun had either been in there or had been put there or something like that. But and that one of the questions she asked was, could it have been that print been put like that if someone wasn't conscious? But the judge, there was an objection, and the judge sustained the objection. So I really don't know. I'm supposed to talk to her later, but I'm sure she won't want to go into too many details of their strategy, but I really don't know anything about forensic science, and
right.
You know, it's one of those things that neither do juries, I think, and so it's a tricky thing to judge. And
so
so how that and you know, how the state's going to lay out its case of, you know, the forensic expert that day, also the ballistics expert, talked about how that gun had not been fired. And it seemed like he was saying the gun had not been fired at all. It could be that he was saying that it had not been fired at that location, based not on...
But he still got the gun charge.
...analysis of the gun, but the shell casing. So there's so many things about how the state's going to be making its case. It seems like it's going to have echoes of the Adnan Syed hearing that was just coming up with there. I think both sides are going to want to make a lot of the cell phone analysis and the cell phone data that the state wants to use to show that he was at the location. And no one disputes he was in the area. So I think there will be a lot of discussion about, well, how accurate and how close can you get to this kind of thing?
Ben, I appreciate taking time. Kelly Holsey just walked in, so we're going to turn to her. I appreciate your time this morning.
Hey,
hi, Kelly. How are you?
Good.
Boehner is reported with The Guardian now and covering a lot of great things that you check out. We'll be linking to his articles on our website. Bay, thanks so much. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Okay, thanks a million.
And we're now in the studio with Kelly Holsley, who is fiancée to Keith Davis Jr. And Kelly, welcome. Good to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll go to the phones here in just a minute at 410-319-8888. This is, for many people in Baltimore who are following this, it's a confusing case.
Very confusing. I'm following it. I'm confused.
So give us your perspective.
You
were on the phone with him when the police were firing at him, correct?
Yes, the whole time.
That must have been pretty scary for you.
It was scary. But, you know, the interesting thing is that I am someone who, this is my first taste of the justice system. So even though Keith was saying that the police is shooting me, it's not registering that police shoot people for no reason. When I know I was talking to you, you weren't doing anything. You were just walking down the street. So it was very scary. It's something you can't forget. But it has been a daunting 9 months, an eye-opening 9 months. And the system that I was taught to believe in, you know, I'm an adult, and I'm learning that it's all not true.
So, I mean, I understand that when he was taken to city jail after he was shot, he still has a bullet in his neck.
Mm-hmm. It sits on his spine. It's actually it started in the center. It has migrated to about the right. He was taken about six. He was held in the hospital for 6 days with no charges, but we weren't allowed to see him. And he was taken in the middle of the night, and his face was out to here. And he had metal. He had just as much metal on this side of his face as he does bone. They completely rebuilt the left side of his face.
So how is he doing?
He's a strong man. He's doing good. He's a man of faith, and he understands that, you know, he didn't do anything. So he just has to wait it out.
Let me get a phone call here, 410-319-8888, and we're talking about the Keith Davis case, which is one of those cases that has captured the community, and especially the activist community here in this city, coming on the heels of Freddie Gray, the first police shooting after that. But a lot of questions around the shooting, that it was a very confusing moment for this city, for the police itself, and this particular case seems very strange in terms of what's come out and what we've just learned about the expert on stand saying the gun was not fired. People, for some reason, don't know whether that means it wasn't fired that night when Keith had it, or whether
it wasn't fired. And I know the media likes to take words out, not put words in. And to be clear, it was a partial palm print. It was just the tip of his pinky and maybe the top of, not even his full palm. It was a partial palm print. And it wasn't consistent with officers' accounts of somebody running down the street, holding, shooting, pointing a gun. It was consistent with someone lying a gun in the area of your palm. Keith was unconscious. A paramedic testified to that. The judge wouldn't let a lot of that come out. But, yes, it's not consistent with anyone shooting or pointing or running down the street like a madman.
But now this gun is supposed to have been the gun used to shoot and kill a young man at Pimlico Racetrack who was getting off of work.
Exactly. And it was tested to have never been fired. And it was tested, I believe, more than twice.
But Keith Davis is still saying he never had this gun.
Never had this gun.
410-319-8888, your thoughts as we talk to Kelly Holsley, who has been not just his fiancée, there's a fiancée, she's been the backbone of his case out in the community, working on this and not giving up. 410-319-8888. Somebody from Be More Black is on the air. Welcome. Who is this?
Hey, this is Baltimore Black, Frank.
Frank, how are you, man? Good?
Hi, Frank.
Good. What's going on, Kelly? I wanted to call and stress one point that Bainard had mentioned.
Okay.
Was the fact that the investigations or lack of investigations that occurred in this case in regard to the Baltimore Police Department and the state's attorney's office. And the Internal Affairs Division has still yet to interview these four officers. It's been over 250 days. So there's this 10-day rule that everybody's stressing right now.
Right.
That
they don't adhere to it at all.
Entirely disregarded. Beyond that, the state's attorney's office, who, as Bain had mentioned, cleared all the officers of criminal wrongdoing before they ever spoke to them, before they interviewed them. They interviewed them January 18th of 2016 when the incident occurred, June 7th of 2015, and they were given those letters of declination in November of 2015. So how did Ms. Marilyn Mosby or whoever in the state's attorney's office come to the conclusion to clear these officers of any wrongdoing when they haven't spoke to them?
And this is something I think you raised, this I saw you quoted in the paper, Kelly, and so let me make sure the quote's correct.
Okay.
Which had to do with the state's attorney's office, and your hope for Miss Mosby when she won, and what talk a bit about your feelings at the moment.
I was one of the people thumbing their fists in the air in the kitchen that she was going to stand up against the odds and against public and popular belief and go after these officers. And I thought for sure that she was all for justice and fairness. However, Keith was indicted on little to no evidence. And to go after and to continuously go after him and to not talk to the public. You know, we have been to her office. We have called. We have sent letters. To completely ignore and just act as if this isn't occurring and to continue to indict this man. Not to mention, not just Keith's case. I realized I did some research. These court dockets have these guys that are sitting for long amounts of times in these pretrial facilities that's overcrowded. And they have postponement after postponement after postponement because there's no evidence. They give these guys deals that they can't refuse.
And they can't afford bail.
They can't afford bail. They're missing birthdays, holidays. You go to visit Keith, and it's the tiniest of babies there with the mothers. They're missing the birth of their children. You give them a deal that they can't refuse, knowing you have little to no evidence. And the guys that say, no, I'm going to push it through, their cases are dropped. Because there's no evidence that, you know, and they postpone to buy themselves time. But, you know, it doesn't matter if you try them today or 6 years from now. You can't make evidence appear. So I'm very disappointed in Ms. Mosby. I do not believe she is for justice and fairness. I really believe that this was a political thing. She exploited the climate of the city. She exploited the death of Freddie Gray. And she used that to put herself in the forefront. And I believe that her husband is using this to garner votes in his aspiration of being mayor.
Let me open the phone to you again, and there's a lot of people calling. Let's try to get to them so you can answer their questions. And if you want to hang on, Frank from Be More Black, hang on in case you have come to you with another comment. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Tim. Ernest, you're on the air. Hi, Ernest, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
If you shoot a gun, you would have gun residue on your hand.
Yes.
And if you shoot a gun, usually the police will put a plastic bag over your hand and secure it so that they could put luminol on your hand and it would show up that you did shoot a gun. And also you would have residue on your clothes.
Yes, there was no gunpowder residue on Keith's clothes, belongings, or himself.
And in your hair. Now, the only way, you're going to find out if that's a bogus print, you're going to have to get a forensic scientists like Cyril Weck, Michael Biden, or Henry Lee.
Okay.
Cyril Weck is in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. But you can look up Michael Biden, and it probably is going to cost you. Or you might be able to get the Innocent Project. Innocent Project, they have two very good... individuals that was in the O.J. Simpson trial.
Yeah, that with the Innocent Project, he would have to be convicted. And actually, he was found. I mean, I guess we could do it with this erroneous charge that they have.
But he hasn't been sentenced to that charge yet, correct?
No. And let's be also clear about the gun charge. Keith was found not guilty of handgun, wear, carry, and transport. That is a possession charge. But he was found guilty of unlawful possession. And it's called an inconsistent verdict. You can't get to B if you don't have A. However, when the state prosecutor, Ms. Kirksky, in her closing argument, what she said to the jury was, you do not need to deliberate on this fact. The fact is that he's a prohibited person. So he was guilty.
Why he was on probation parole?
He had like a prior record that caused him to be a prohibited person. He is guilty of being with a handgun. You don't need to deliberate on that. And all of the charges, the original charges, were on one sheet, and it was all not guilty. And then you get to this one sheet, and it's unlawful possession is guilty. And I really believe that the jury was misled. So that is in the process of being taken care of.
So what do you know about the charge, the murder charge you resisted?
I know absolutely nothing. We know what they, we know the lies that they said on the news that he shot at officers the day before. They claim to have cell phone data that can put him on the scene of the crime, which is completely ridiculous. And that's about it. And then they just reference the case that he just was acquitted of.
Let me open the phones again, if I might.
410-319-8888.
We're here with Kelly Holsey, whose fiance, who's Keith Davis Jr.'s fiance, and obviously very active in his case. 410-319-8888. Tim, you're on the air. Welcome.
I'd like to ask a couple of questions.
Go ahead.
I read the article this morning in the city paper, and I was still somewhat confused. I'm still confused after sort of hearing.
I'm confused, too.
The fact that I just tuned into the station. But I'm trying to find out. It sounds like he was in a cab.
No, he never was in a cab.
He was being accused.
He was accused of being in a cab. However, that cab driver was walked face to face to him in court, and he looked at him and said, "No, that is not him. That's not the guy who robbed me."
Okay. So does he live in the neighborhood where the pursuit started, and he was like walking to a friend's house?
No, he was at a family member's house that he stayed after, and he was walking to a family member's store to get to his god sister's house.
Okay.
So it's one of those things where you kind of stay out and party all night and you don't make it home, and now you got to get home. It was an early Sunday morning after staying out and being at a family event Saturday evening.
Right. Okay. I mean, I'd never heard where any of the family members were sort of offering an alibi or whatever. So, I mean, you know, that's news to me, but it's the first time I'm ever hearing of that, reading the article or anything. So
yeah, those articles leave out a lot.
So did the family testify in court that he was out?
It was no need. It was no need. All of the state's witnesses, for the most part, was the state witnesses. And all of their evidence and everything that they proved that Keith was innocent. So, I mean,
they didn't offer any defense witnesses?
There was the defense witnesses. There was I was on the phone with him while he was walking to the store. And there was the paramedic to testify that he was unconscious and he could not have said what they were trying to say and that he was completely non-responsive. And then there was a character witness. However, there was nobody else to, there was nobody else that needed to testify. And then also the judge made them cut the witness list down. So the witnesses to testify as alibi was there, but he said it was too many witnesses. So the witness list had to be cut down.
Too many witnesses?
Yeah, it was too many witnesses.
Who was the judge?
Judge Barry Williams, who was a pretty awesome, fair judge. Stern, strict, but he's very fair.
And he's the one who's going to pass sentence on Keith for this gun charge?
If we get there, like I said, the verdict is in the motion of being stricken. It's what's called an inconsistent verdict.
So has he been charged with this murder?
Yes, he has been charged.
Because we heard just from Boehner there's some confusion about what's happening with this charge.
Yeah, because one day he was charged and then all of the charges were null processed. And then the next day they were picked up all over again. So we really don't have much information. We have his charging documents. However, because this process seems to be so shady, I regret to comment on what it says, but it is untrue, and his lawyers are in mode, and they are awesome, and they are ready to rumble. And
I saw that quote in the
Ms. Williams, her words.
So we'll see what happens with this gun charge. I mean, with his latest charge of murder.
I think it's just sad. It's collateral damage at this point, and it's unfortunate that a young man's death. And his family.
Wasn't it the fact that the hack driver said that the person who held him, tried to hold him up, had dreads?
He said he had.
Is that what he said?
The description he gave was very clear. Is that this man was in his 30s with cornrows? No tattoos. He had on a white shirt with a blue emblem, and he had on shorts. And the gun was silver. He was sure. I know my guns. I know what my guns look like. And Keith has no braids. He is not in his 30s. He does have tattoos. He's very, very light. You even had a witness on the stand testify that officers coached her. They told her what to say. They were trying to get her to see things that she did not see.
And the gun they did recover, whoever that gun belonged to, was a black gun.
I actually couldn't see it in court. So the officers gave despairing descriptions of it. The witnesses did as well. The gun is registered to a Frank Gorman. A Ronald Frank Gorman. That name sounds familiar because when I looked up his name, he was arrested in 1999 for illegally selling guns to commercial business, i.e. liquor stores, auto garages. However, that came out in court briefly, so I'm not sure. officers spoke with Mr. Gorman in this process, and then the gun mysteriously turned up, reported stolen in September of 2015, a whole couple months after this incident.
That's, where is Keith now?
Keith is at, he is being held in downtown in one of the pretrial facilities. He's on 23-1, which is horrible to be locked up for 23 hours and get out for an hour when you've done anything, nothing wrong.
And but how is he feeling physically?
Physically, he's in a lot of pain. He has a lot of nerve damage. His hearing goes in and out.
Shot in the face.
Yeah, that there's nothing that they can do for his neck, the pain in his neck. So I think that that's what bothers him the most. His medicine is very inconsistent. It's the prison. It's not a five-star hospital, so he goes without his meds sometimes.
It's not a one-star hospital.
Yeah, no, he's had infections in the infirmary. I've had to email. I've had to call. But it's unfortunate.
Kelly Holtz, I appreciate you coming in.
Mm-hmm.
We will stay and keep on this case periodically as we follow, see what happens with Keith Davis.
Thank you.
We'll be bringing Kelly back on. We'll have some attorneys come on at some point to really debate this case back and forth legally to see what they say as well, and continue to talk to Baynard Woods, who's covering this intensely, to see where this all goes.
And consistently. And factually. Baynard is awesome.
Baynard Woods is one of the best reporters I know.
Yes, he is.
Kelly Holsey, fiancée of Keith Davis Jr., who's leading the fight in this case for her fiancé, Keith Davis Jr. Thanks so much for coming by today.
Thank you for having me.
We got to take a short break, and we're going to examine what's happening at Renaissance Academy and our schools. John Comer's coming in. Stay with us. We'll be right back.